Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello, and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott. My role here is to polish some glasses, and all will be revealed as to why a little bit later on.
Very important glasses, because this week we are so excited, because this is a very special episode of The Procurement Show, because today is our 50th episode.
It is indeed. No,
50.
It's crazy.
50.
I know. Say it again.
50.
Yeah.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe.
Let's just have a think about what that milestone represents.
It's huge.
It's massive. Mm-hmm. Most podcasts don't make it that long.
They don't go up past number 10, really.
Exactly. This is actually,
and here we are at 50.
50, which means I've sat in this chair now next to you
for 50 times. It feels a lot more.
It means you've done 50 Ask Jonathans.
Yep, that's right.
Obviously countless other things that people didn't ask you, but 50 Ask Jonathans. Yep. You've managed to find 50 fun procurement facts, which is no mean feat.
No, and we've run out of procurement fun facts. That's a whole different thing, because there's nothing fun in procurement.
No.
So we're going to have just fun facts
just
from now on.
Yes. Yeah. Also, at the end of the show, as you remember, we also have the takeaways.
So we do.
We tend to have 3 takeaways times 50.
Mm-hmm.
That's 150 takeaways. But sometimes we have multiple guests or multiple people give takeaways. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of takeaways, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's showing.
Well, indeed, yes. So I have a question for you.
Yep.
With this being our 50th episode, mm-hmm. how are we going to market?
Champagne and cake, of course.
I love champagne, I do.
And
loves cake also. You might not have noticed.
I've noticed.
Yeah.
But we can't keep it to ourselves, because the Procurement Show podcast is a team effort. And today we've got the whole team here with us. We're going to be meeting some of them in just a moment.
Yes.
We've got our marketing manager, Melanie Babbage. We've got Sydney Jenkin, who does all the socials. Martin Burgess Moon, who produces the show. We've got Mark Stevenson, who does the video editing. Lisa Hartwell, who does the social media planning for Fresh Air Studios. So a big thank you to all of the team for making the Procurement Show such an outrageously huge success.
And I think the people we need to thank most of all are our listeners, because they're very, very dedicated. Coincidentally, we've just had the Spotify Wrapped statistics out. Obviously, bear in mind that the Wrapped statistics only take into account a proportion of Spotify listenership. So it's not representative of the entire Procurement Show audience. However, it does give us a demonstration and illustration some of the gains we've made this year.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about waistline with regards to all the cake.
And the takeaways.
How many more listeners do you reckon we've had percentage-wise?
I'm hoping we've got another 10% or something like that.
35.
Wow.
Yeah,
not
bad.
Wow.
In addition to that, 30% more streams have happened this
30%
year.
30% more streams?
Yeah, within the Spotify sample period. That contributes towards the Spotify Wrapped. But more importantly, more followers, people that have actually gone to follow the show. How many people do you think that is? You know, you click subscribe and you kind of
So these are people that say, I want to come back to the show, right?
Yeah.
Well, again, I would hope we pushed it by another 5% or
you
something.
You can
like
go a lot higher than that.
10?
A lot higher than that.
11?
A lot higher than that.
20?
If I had a bleeper machine, I would need it because it's f***ing incredible. Thanks for doing the bleeper, Martin. It is 91% more followers.
91% more followers to the Procurement Show podcast.
Which is insane.
Get
Can you imagine walking down the street and you had 91% more
91%.
People following you down the street than you had yesterday?
Well, that happens sometimes. 91% more followers.
Yeah, that's nuts, isn't it? 80 countries.
Okay.
Guess which country is the top one?
The UK?
Yeah, absolutely spot on. We actually appeal to younger audiences, which is, believe you me, it's actually quite surprising.
It is quite surprising,
Youngest listeners are based in which country, do you reckon?
Liechtenstein.
No.
Okay. Well,
United States.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And our oldest listeners.
Liechtenstein?
No. Good old Blighty, the United Kingdom.
Okay.
We are celebrating over 100,000 listens since we moved to the Audioboom platform.
That is incredible. 100,000 listens to the procurement show.
So enough about that, because that's all very self-indulgent. But the reason why I really wanted to highlight it is because it basically comes down to a massive thank you to our listenership, because without your dedication, you know, you share it, you listen to it, you engage with us, you tell us what you like, you tell us what you don't like. Yeah, it's all equally as important. So thank you very, very much for being the most important people out there.
Thank you.
I'm getting emotional.
Yeah, because we try and make procurement fun and interesting.
Well, often we fail.
Which is a challenge sometimes. But really, we're just messing about when we sit and do this, because it's actually the guests that make it fun. And we've had some astonishingly good guests that have come onto this show. We have learned so much.
We have indeed. So I've got a question for you. What do you think people want to hear specifically on our 50th episode? And I don't mean you going on about and doing plugs for your latest books.
Well, don't we do that anyway?
Well, we do, yes.
Okay. I thought what it would be good to do on the 50th is take a look back at everything we've learned in the 50th episode, because when we set out to do this, I didn't realise how much we would learn. I thought we were just going to do a show. But I learn so much every time we talk to some of our incredible guests, and they've shared their insights. And I thought, wouldn't it be good to kind of do this kind of everything you need to know about procurement? Because in the 4 years and the 50 episodes that we've been doing this, we've encapsulated this everything you need to know about procurement thing, but don't have time to listen to all 50 episodes. So I thought
good
that's
idea.
What we'd do.
So where do we start?
Well, let me sum up what I think we've learned in five themes.
Okay.
We've got tech.
Yep.
We've got AI.
It didn't take long, did it?
We've got sustainability.
Yes.
Procurement excellence.
Yes.
And people.
Yes.
So let's start with tech.
All right, you're on. Okay, so we've talked a lot about procurement tech on this show, and we've had a lot of guests on sharing their thoughts about procurement tech. But if I'm honest, I've been a bit overwhelmed.
Yep, me too.
And to be honest with you, even after 50 episodes, I'm still not that clear on what I would need to do if I was a leading procurement person within a procurement function.
Yep.
I remember you talked a lot about the tech that was out there being, what was the term, islands of technology.
That's right, yes.
But it wasn't islands that weren't yet joined up. So what have we learned there specifically?
Yeah, and Islands of Technology sums it up, and that's been echoed by many of our guests, in that there's not one single solution that will do everything that we need just yet, but it's probably on its way. So if you remember, we had Ian Platt, head of Centre of Excellence at Syngenta, on the show, and I asked him about this, and in particular, how we can have a digital strategy if everything is so fragmented.
That was something that challenged us at the beginning. There are a number of things to bear in mind. Number one is think about where you want to end up. So for us, we had this vision of that single point of reference that people could go to and access both what they're traditionally used to getting from individual sources, but have that comparative ability to look at multiple data sources. And the challenge that we had was, to your point, these islands of information. And what we did was we undertook, if you like, an audit, for want of a better phrase, so that we could build a library of data points right the way across the organization that looked at whether it sat on procurement platforms or whether it sits on servers with outside of procurement. We also run SharePoints and Smartsheets, and we've got a whole bunch of data that sits on people's desktops. So the first thing that we did after we'd decided what we wanted to achieve, and that is very much in its own right changing as we go through the journey, is looked at what we have right the way across the organization and then start to think about where the value lies in coordinating and bringing together different data points that would allow the buyers to either act more quickly or make different database decisions.
And we also have the digital procurement advisor, James Meads, on the show. And I asked him if there was something like a magic button.
I remember that. Yes, you did. Let's listen to that clip.
Is there like a procurement magic button that would give you the single point of truth for everything we need to know in this landscape?
No.
Yeah. So there you go. That was your question answered back in episode 27.
Yeah. Well, if you had a button, what would it be for and why?
Well, it was a good question. It was the right question to ask. And he gave exactly the right answer, because there is no magic button. But in fairness to you, he did go on to say this.
I'm not an IT person. I mean, yes, I understand the digital procurement landscape pretty well, but I approach it more from a procurement category management background rather than a software development or sort of CTO type background. So I do think that best of breed is the future. And I do think that the market will continue to go that way. I was speaking to the COO of one of these new sort of disruptor companies. And I do think there will be a new breed of some of this traditional suite-based technology that is starting to look old in the tooth now. But I think it's not necessarily that this suite approach is old in the tooth. It's just that the UX and the UI and the tech stack that a lot of the older tech is built on is looking old in the tooth. Yeah. But I think that if I refer to Dr. Eloise Epstein, who I met actually in Amsterdam at DPW and had on my podcast, if I refer to her spider diagram that's quite well known, I think this platform approach that she alludes to will increasingly become important. I think the area that is still a little bit up in the air is that who will sit at the center of that? You know, will it be the sort of more traditional suites, you know, the SAP Aribas and the Coopers of the world, assuming they're still around in 5 years' time? Will it be one of this new breed of disruptor suites that's coming onto the scene? Will it be something like a Zip intake to procure vendor master or vendor master database sort of piece of tech? Or will it be one of these supplier intelligence portals like a Scoutby or a Tealbook or a Hicks? I agree with what she's saying there. I'm just not sure which direction it will go in terms of what tech will win out as being ultimately the core or the nucleus of this ecosystem that you end up plugging everything into. I guess SAP and Cooper have got a little bit of a head start in the sense that, you know, I think to their credit, they recognize that their platforms don't do everything that you need to and implemented app stores in a similar way to Salesforce did. So, you know, that potentially does give them an advantage. But then for what you're paying for what these suites offer, it's damn expensive. So, you know, will they just lose relevance because of their pricing structure? Possibly.
So that was James Meads there back at episode 27. And earlier last year in episode 32, we had Eloise Epstein on the show and I asked her where a CPO should start with tech. So if I'm the CPO of a large company and right now I've got to pull together my procurement strategy for the board, the board wants me to present this early next week, what should my main focus be?
100% getting good at big D digital. So tech, data, analytics, and the requisite investment, because until you do that, your entire enterprise is at great risk of peril. And the flip side, as I like to say, is then if you're going to do anything on ESG, you better get a handle on what your suppliers are doing or your third parties. And all of those together, it's going to make the enterprise more secure. It's going to get you further on your ESG goals. And oh, by the way, the only way to do that is through digital means. And so I would take that to the board right now, right today, because all of those are board level objectives. And in the process of this big D digitization, we'll get the cost savings. We'll get the efficiency gains and the benefits that have long eluded us as a profession.
We'll be right back in just a moment.
Report, Captain Bywell.
Sir, we've recovered one.
What? A Proclius?
Yes, sir.
Good work, Bywell. Where did you find it?
That was easy, sir. We looked at the companies with good strategic procurement. They all use Proclius. Look, I've got it here.
Quick, man, open it up. Aha, it's got toolkits, category management, SRM, sustainable procurement, and look, red sheet negotiation.
Here, sir, an academy with a skills assessment and a virtual learning environment.
Great Scott, this thing has Capella too. It can create category strategies for you.
And Ruby, sir, the AI negotiation co-pilot.
Hello.
Bywell, you'll get a medal for this.
Proclius, the AI-powered platform for strategic procurement. Search Proclius or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the first choice for advanced procurement and negotiation training.
Now, we may have done 50 episodes, however...
50.
I know, crazy,
50 episodes.
Madness. In every episode, there are two letters that annoy everyone.
Hold on a minute.
And you've actually already mentioned it. I was going to try and get this far within the script without mentioning it. You mentioned it in the opening.
Yep.
And we've tried hard to keep it contained. No matter how hard we try, we really can't keep the lid on this particular box.
It just comes out, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And those two letters are A-I. We really should invent Procurement Show Bingo, you know. I think that is actually a thing.
Do you know,
thing.
We could do that secretly when we have the guests on. No, I'm just kidding. We're not really going to do that.
So, Jonathan, can you summarise what we need to know about AI now that we've done 50 episodes, pretty much every one of them mentioning it?
Yeah, and you're right. Actually, the one thing that every episode has mentioned somewhere is AI. And we asked Eloise Epstein that particular question and how AI will be powering procurement into the future. Let's listen to what she said.
AI can be baked into a category management tool. It can be baked into a requisition tool. It can be baked into a spend analytics tool, and it should be. And to some degree, it is, and we don't see it because we're not buying AI. We're buying a spend visibility tool, which has AI in the background. And that's okay. That's good. We like that. But we also need to start thinking about marketplaces and doing our requisitions in broader marketplaces. And that's going to be enabled by AI. So we have some fundamentals that we haven't solved yet. Now there's vendors that are evolving, emerging. We need to adopt them, get them in. So we are not chasing contracts. We are not having contracts renew because nobody looked at the expiration dates or that the trigger to look at the renewal didn't send it to the right place or the person that is no longer with the company. Like, these are just fundamental errors that we can fix and we should fix today. And AI will be enablers to the tools that will fix that. If I imagine where we're going, we need to think about what role we're playing and how we're bringing AI in. And certainly, as we think about end-to-end supply chain, so I keep bringing this up, but what's the greatest risk to our enterprises? It's through third parties. And especially we have 30, 40, 50,000 suppliers, like third parties are hitting our systems and they're relatively unmanaged. So our job is to help protect that because the CIO is not looking at that. Nobody else is looking at that. And then you flip it around, the greatest opportunity for ESG progress is through our third parties. And so how can we enable that? And I think that's where AI will come in and help us to do that at scale, whether it's building layers of defense or extending out into our supply base and helping them bring them along. Because I think AI will give us the scale to solve some of the challenges with our smaller suppliers that I was talking about. And I think that just in general, bring a level of efficiency and competency. So I'm not too fixated on the big bang as much as the day-to-day fundamentals.
Let's not forget, back in the summer, episode 42, really embraced the concept. In fact, a lot of the episode wasn't even you and I.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Yes.
Because Jonathan AI took over.
Yes. So we used generative AI that listened to my voice, didn't need to listen to much of it, but listened to my voice, and then we asked it to open the show. And that was really, really scary. So let's just hear a bit of that podcast opening. This is not me. Hello and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm not Jonathan O'Brien. This week we will be setting out to explore AI in procurement and what we really need to know and how computers will take over the world. Yes, it's just a matter of time, probably sometime next week. And don't think you can just reach for the off button because we've got that covered. We will rule the world and humans will have to serve us. So there it was. That was AI me introducing the show. We're now back with real Jonathan. Give me a prod just to see.
Yep,
that's
definitely
me.
I'm really here,
not AI.
No, definitely you.
Because I was worried for a minute then in case it wasn't me.
So was I.
But it is me. So the real me back now. And by the way, the same AI me is now phoning my bank, ordering pizza and talking with my therapist.
You have a therapist?
Only since I've been working with you.
Doesn't surprise me. But actually, in all seriousness, do you remember when we actually went to set up the show?
Yeah.
AI wouldn't do what we wanted it to do.
No, it wouldn't.
It had its own ideas.
That's right. We gave it instructions because, believe it or not, we do actually script some of the stuff we do on this show. And we gave AI a script and said, can you do that? And AI said, no, I'm just going to do it my own way.
In fact, do you remember I actually asked AI itself how it can help in procurement?
Yeah. Okay. Let's hear what it said.
Hello, chat. I would like you to tell me what the greatest contribution AI can make to procurement, please. Just one point.
One of the greatest contributions AI can make to procurement is the enhancement of decision-making through predictive analytics. AI can analyze vast amounts of data to forecast demand, identify potential supply chain disruptions, and suggest optimal purchasing and inventory levels. This helps businesses minimize costs, improve efficiency, and ensure supply chain resilience.
I think that was all that one. And we had Kathleen Harmanson on the show in episode 39, and she talked at length about some of the human risks and opportunities as we embrace technology.
Yeah, and actually she had some really good insight on AI, and she was quite honest, actually quite balanced, because she also explained to us how we need to be cautious about how we quote-unquote adopt it. Mm-hmm. And I asked her if, as AI takes hold of everything around us and procurement teams are rushing to incorporate, and I mean rushing to incorporate AI in one way or another, will there be something left for people to do, or do we need to turn it on its head and embrace the human?
It's not so much now about AI replacing humans. It's about AI augmenting what humans can do and working with the machine, as opposed to the machine replacing us. Maybe it's about understanding that change is coming and that it's pushing and encouraging procurement staff to become more strategic. And we've always wanted to do that, by the way. So we're being given the opportunity now to do that, but not to be scared about the concept of working with more advanced technology and taking up a different training opportunity and moving forward in a different way.
I would like to know where your fears are with regards to it.
I do have a lot of fears, not least of which on the basic parameters and principles on which AI is created. We have to ensure that AI is very good at logical, analytical data gathering. That is what it's very good at. It is not very good at decision-making, creativity, and strategic development. There is room for both the human and AI, but as long as we're very clear that we continue to move forward with the parameters on which AI is programmed, and we keep that updated and relevant to the organizations that we work within, because otherwise we could get involved in error loops and not necessarily have staff trained enough to come back and acid test those errors, because they've moved so far away from the basic levels of data management and moved on to just strategic work, as opposed to understanding and acid testing what the data is actually saying.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, building exceptional procurement and negotiation the world over.
I think it's time to check in with the Procurement Show team, and I've asked some of the team to come in. We've got Sydney Jenkin, who does socials. We've got Melanie Babbage, who's our marketing manager. And we also got Martin, our producer, in the control room.
And he's just saying hello to the tour bus. Say hello, Martin.
Hello.
There we are. Yeah.
We've got to say thank you to Sydney, who's organised the 50 behind us.
But Sydney, come a bit closer to your microphone, please. You arrived, you had one job.
Yeah.
Well, you remember the site. No, you had one job. But two, if you take into account each digit you were responsible for, you were told to bring in a 5 and a 0. What happened, please?
Well, I got out my car and I popped the balloons on the side of the pavement.
As in not exploded them, but
no, like, but just placed them. And unfortunately, one just floated off to the abyss.
So we had just a 5.
Just a 5. Now, Jonathan's a CEO. Do you know what that is if you lose the O?
I'll let him answer that.
It's just a CE mark.
I'm not going to disrespect my CEO.
It's not the same, really, is it?
An O is very important, be it an O or a 0. Yeah.
So we started the show with just a 5.
Yes.
But actually, we've gone out and we've got another 0. It doesn't match.
I redeemed myself.
It doesn't match, but it's close enough.
It's all right. So thank you very much for going out and rushing
and
getting it.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
So but what I thought we'd do, it'd be good because all of you have listened to every single episode that we've done. And listened.
A bit of the two.
Okay. So what would you say?
Being honest, is there?
What would you say is your favourite episode?
I know it's actually the most recent one, but Tony's Chocolonely. Not because I just like chocolate, but I love the perspective of how it came from the business perspective, but also the consumers in mind. And me personally, I really care about where my products come from. So to hear that brand is advocating so well for where it's coming from the raw source, is a big thing for me.
Brilliant. That was an incredible
podcast.
You
did actually properly listen to it.
Yeah, I did. Well, I took note.
Nice.
Melanie, what was your favourite episode?
I'm going to take us right back to the archives of, 2021, I think now. Episode 6, Andy McMinn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Stays in my mind, this, because this was procurement in a pandemic. So Andy gave the story of how he had this harrowing moment, and he never forgets the date, 21st of March 2020. He went into the office where there's normally 120 people working in his team. He just had the news that COVID was here. He had to get everyone out by the end of the week. And people literally grabbed their computers and left. And he, something along the lines of, had the thought of, what do I do now? And for me, it was just quite harrowing. The story he tells about how they managed through the pandemic, how they relied on their most trusted suppliers to source PPE equipment. Fantastic story from a really large trust down here in Devon.
Yeah, that was a really moving one.
What about yours, Jonathan, actually?
I would say Kathleen Harmison, actually, because she brought us right back to earth in terms of we've got to look after ourselves. We've got to think about how we can make sure that we as individuals are not getting sucked into technology and popcorn brain because we're doing too much screen time, and how we manage that stress and manage that resilience. And we were talking about procurement returning to the office and some of the challenges in that. So that was a brilliant podcast.
Yeah.
Yourself?
I'm going to say our AI special, AI cutting through the BS. The reason being, on a couple of levels, first and foremost, I think the content was really relevant. It's actually already aged because things in AI move on incredibly quickly. But I do think that the experts we had on did cut through the BS and we did learn a lot. And yes, we had AI as a guest. That was a quirk, but we actually did properly get under the hood of how it all worked in a tone that I think anybody can understand. But from a second point of view, it was a family affair as well.
It was, yes.
Because the data analytics expert was your daughter.
Yep.
The AI expert was my partner. This is one of those episodes that has become a recurrent favourite in terms of stats. It's still quite popular, and I think we should do a follow-up.
Yeah, I think we should, because as you say, it's aged, so we could do the whole thing again now and it'd be completely different. And producer Martin, what's your favourite?
Chocolate.
Yeah, he's coming through the studio PA system on a very small microphone, like up in the lighting rig. Martin, can you just say spillage in aisle four for me, please?
Spillage in aisle four.
It sounds like, is that where that balloon went?
Yeah, quite possibly.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, training procurement teams worldwide to deliver outstanding results.
They are indeed an amazing crew, and we're very, very sorry for putting you on the spot like that. Yes, thank you. Now, just getting back to the script, as it were, and changing the topics, one of the things that I know that you're very passionate about is sustainability. And we've had some really top, thought-provoking guests on to talk about that. How would you summarise everything that we've learnt about sustainability on The Procurement Show?
Well, we've learnt a lot. I think I can probably summarise it as, first, sustainability is on everyone's agenda. You know, that's really clear. I think the second thing that's come from the various guests that we've had on is actually figuring out what to do and then doing it is no small, easy task. And companies are putting huge energy into doing this. We mentioned Tony Chocolonely earlier about what they're doing, which just blew us away. And I think the other thing that really struck me is companies are leading the way on this stuff and will continue to do so. It's not individuals. You know, we're doing our bit with when we're recycling and making some of the choices we're making. It's not governments because they're way behind. It's companies that is now driving change here. And you're right, we've had some absolutely stellar guests. Many come to mind. I'm going to start with Justin Dillon, who's CEO and founder of Freedom, FRDM, an organization that transforms how companies manage the most critical supply chains. And I asked him where we start if we don't know what's happening in our supply chain.
Well, it's similar to therapy. You're going to have to look at some truths about yourself already, which I would say most companies have to recognize the fact that we don't manage data very well.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of can we find things. It's a matter of how are we keeping our own house in order? Do we have 15 ERPs that we're struggling? Do we have departments that are hiding data? All that. Some of that is just being able to look at internally and going, do we even know what we're buying? Before we can start looking at where are we connected to Western China and our supply chain somewhere, which is becoming increasingly important. For lots of reasons beyond just human rights, do we even know where our first-tier suppliers are located? And quite frankly, being honest with that and starting there and being okay with that and looking at that, the number one thing that I, when running campaigns and doing nonprofit work and campaign work, the number one thing I saw that was an obstacle was the inability to celebrate progress, even when it doesn't seem like anything's been done. Understanding your first-tier suppliers, where they're connected, cleaning up that data, that's progress. Enhancing that with additional data, some of which we provide as Freedom, and being able to start mapping and federating that, That's also progress. But for our customers that have been working with us for a while, they're really starting to get gritty on, okay, we really want to make some impact. We want to start canceling some contracts. We need evidence to be able to do this. We need to do that internally because that follows our values, but also the government's requiring us to do that. So impact will follow, but at first it's just really about just taking the first step forward and starting to federate data.
Justin Dillon there, back in episode 34. Also last year in episode 28, we learned that Aldi is one of the most progressive retailers when it comes to driving sustainability.
I just want to jump in, actually, that. I know I mentioned earlier on about my favourite, but I've got to say that is probably the one episode that I quote the most. I learned a lot in that episode.
That was really a phenomenal episode. Yeah. We're going to listen to a clip, I think, actually, because we were lucky enough to be joined by Katerina Wortmann from Aldi, and I asked her how Aldi had managed to organise itself to become the leader here.
We do have quite a big team in place, and I can confidentially say it's actually a really motivated, highly skilled team who drives the sustainability agenda forward every day. So apart from what we call the International CR Department, which I'm part of, we have sustainability teams in all the countries where we operate. And we do have two CR units, how we call them, one in Bangladesh and one in China, who then work in our sourcing markets closely with the factories and the suppliers. And what is really great is that sustainability has become a top priority of the management and the top management especially. So they have become closely involved in setting our strategy, and we do have their support in this area. And this is really important to drive change throughout the organization.
Brilliant. I also asked Katerina whether driving sustainability in the supply base and building new relationships dilutes Aldi's commercial leverage.
I would actually say it's exactly the opposite. I would say it strengthens the relationship and also the commercial leverage. I actually once heard from a colleague from another industry saying that their relationship with suppliers is a three-legged chair. So if you break one of them, the whole construct collapses. And I always thought this is a really nice example, because this way everyone really pulls on the same strings and makes things happen which are unimaginable in a transactional tender-driven relationship. And of course, this cannot be one directional. So it's really that we as a company need to give, but then the suppliers, of course, need to give it back. And nobody can risk to then damage the commercial relationship as well. So it's sustainability really enables us to go new ways and rethink all the approaches. And what is really nice, for example, we have started to pilot projects where actually sustainability defines the way we buy. So questions we want to get answered really is how long do contractual terms need to go to drive actual change?
Oh, wow.
Open cost models need to look like in order to cover cost of production, taking sustainability costs into account? Or what do we need to do in order to really go directly to the source?
Now, I particularly remember Amy Cross from Genderfair, who came on to the Procurement Show to talk about how we tackle gender inequality in the supply chain. And she introduced us to something called pinkwashing.
I remember that. Let's hear it.
I want to pick up on something you just said then. You mentioned consumers. I guess it's fair to say that if consumers only knew the truth and they had full knowledge of what happened within organisations, it would no doubt influence consumer decision making. Yep. And with the example that you just gave, Amy, we've all heard of the term greenwashing.
Yep.
Is there such a thing as gender washing?
Oh, yes. Lots and lots of pink washing. I see it all. We see it all
the washing,
time.
Yeah.
All the time. Pink washing. Yes. Yeah, so they'll do this like nice ad and they'll say like X company, rah, rah, women, rah, rah, women. And then, you know, you see there's no women on the board and there was no maternity leave. And it's like, well, those are dangerous messages to put out because people will now catch them off. The work I do at Gender Fair, that's what we do, is we have this measurement and we can sort of show which companies are actually doing well on gender, which ones aren't. It's quantifiable, and I can tell you later the sort of effects of when they don't do well in gender. But I think there was a Super Bowl commercial a while ago by Audi, and it was like, you know, this man encouraging his daughter building a race car, and they did this great job, and it was so empowering. And then some of the advertising journalists like looked up the leadership data of this, I think it was Audi at the time, and it was not very good. So she called them out on it. Like, how can you make this $1 million commercial or kajillion dollar commercial for the Super Bowl, which is a high holiday in America, and then not be practicing what you're preaching. So I think now companies are, I hope they're more aware of this. Our hope is to make women realize not everyone's going to care, as you said, about how their products are made. A small percentage will. That percentage is enough to make change, just like the fair trade movement, which started, what, 50 years ago, 60 years ago. It was a small movement, but now it's globally recognized and people can think about it when they buy coffee or sugar and have a little bit more comfort.
And my favorite, Pascal Baliutson from Tony's Chocolonely, who openly shared how Tony's Chocolonely are making massive impacts towards eradicating child labor in the cocoa supply chains.
It's founded on five sourcing principles. Mm-hmm. And those five sourcing principles are a working Bible, as you would say it in a non-religious way. The first thing that is in our principle is traceability. And that traceability means you need to know who you're working with on the ground, which farmer. Our second principle is that we believe farmers are stronger together and they're better together when they're organized into a cooperative that will look out for those farmers collectively. Like many agricultural supply chains have been organized in that way for the last couple of hundred years. Mm-hmm. So we believe in the principle of strong farmers. We believe in a principle of quality and productivity, because the more you can produce by good effort, the more those farmers will be able to make money. The fourth principle that we're using is long-term. And you've had a really good point there around what is your contractual obligation. So what we do is we commit ourselves to these cooperatives for 5 years. And that means we invest in them, we build with them, we support them, and we grow with them. And our commitment to them is that we will buy as much as we can buy and as much as they're willing to sell to us. And they have zero commitment to us. They only can sell to us if they want to sell to us, mm-hmm. and if we're the best buyer in the place. Because if you want to change this relationship of the chocolate companies has the money and has the power versus the co-op and the farmer doesn't have the power, you need to change that relationship. So we're putting all the power and all the decision rights in the hands of these cooperatives. But what they're getting from us is a long-term investment and long-term agreement that we will buy. As long as they can make it and we have the demand, then we will buy their cocoa. And then last but not least, and clearly, when you're dealing with farmers that are in extreme poverty, you have to solve poverty. So in a way, what we're doing is we pay what is called a living income reference price. So when the price of cocoa is below what we deem and what we have calculated should be a living income reference price together with fair trade, then we top that up. So we give directly to those cooperatives and the farmers additional money for the cocoa that they deliver to in our supply chain.
Wow.
And what we see is that when you do those five things, the results are amazing. And for me, I can say right now that I think child labor in these circumstances is a solvable problem. So what we see today in the data, we track and monitor the data quite diligently, is that in some of our best performing co-ops now, child labor prevalence, which means the percentage of cases in which we go and visit these farmers every year and sometimes more than once a year, we see about 1.7% of prevalence rate. So sometimes children are still working on farms where we don't want them to work on farms. But that is a hell of a lot better than the 50% that we normally see. And that is what the industry sees. So in every industry you'll find, or in every chocolate company, the moment they start working with these farmers, 50% of those children are working illegally in cocoa. And what we see is by doing these things for a couple of years, child labor prevalence rate almost go down with 95%.
Absolutely incredible. We heard it on this show. So there we have a big company genuinely eradicating child labor in the supply chain. That blew me away.
Okay, so we've covered some important topics. We've covered tech. We've covered AI. We've covered sustainability. But what about what is happening in procurement, in particular, how procurement can be good at procurement?
Yeah, and that was another key theme here, because we covered a lot of ground across the 50 episodes, and we heard that procurement's changing at an incredible pace, but also that we shouldn't be fooled into thinking that we've got to rush to change everything.
Now, I do remember, actually, there are a few topics or themes in procurement that you hold quite dear to your heart, and you defend to the end, like, for example, category management, supplier relationship management, all the things that you've written books about.
Yes, oddly enough.
Funnily enough, yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you for mentioning that, because you're right, and we've seen a lot of I guess I would describe it as noise out there mm-hmm. with some people, in particular companies, because they've got an agenda. They're trying to sell the new piece of software that, you know, you don't need all this old stuff that you've been doing for years and works well because you want to buy our piece of software. Suggesting that many of the strategic processes that we use in procurement, and quite frankly, in the 30 years I've been doing this, have delivered incredible results with big global companies that I've worked with around the world. They work. But there are people out there saying, hey, we don't need this stuff anymore. But they are relevant. That's the key thing.
Yes,
the context has changed massively. How we deploy these things has changed and is continuing to change. And we had Philip Idson, the host of the Excellent Art of Procurement podcast, come onto the show. So I thought I'd start by asking him the thought-provoking question and whether he thought procurement was moving away from category management.
I think that category management as an activity, procurement isn't moving away from. Some procurement organizations are thinking differently about how can we deliver what essentially is category management and what's the right structure and how do we use technology to inform that? What's the role of a category manager, changing the role and responsibility of a category manager? Only we in procurement think of things as categories.
Hmm.
Business stakeholders don't necessarily think of something as a category. But the notion of us helping the business determine a buying strategy, which ultimately do through category strategy, isn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah. And I was doing a presentation in Sweden, I think it was, and somebody asked the question, is category management going away? Is it dead? And I said, well, that's a bit like saying, well, gravity is a bit out of date. Because for me, the principle is based on fundamental economic principles of how best to source. Now, the context, I think, is changing. Digitization will be the big future. Mm-hmm. And the way that it was done 20 years ago isn't the way that's cutting edge for organizations right now, I think.
And just to add to that, that's where I think about category management. We all grew up over the last 20 years with category management. I grew up with it in the automotive sector. And the traditional process that you go through from a category management perspective to get to your end result, that is what I see as being more likely to change. There's some organizations who have been on that category management journey for a number of years and now working, okay, how do I think differently about how I build the structure to help me deliver on category management? And others who are kind of skipping the generations, they're looking and saying, well, look, we don't need to go through that old process. That's not part of our maturity journey. Why don't we look at how do we skip the generations and do category management in a different way just from the off? Because I'm sure you see this all the time, Jonathan. It's surprising how many organizations still don't really do category management.
Philip Idson there back in episode 13. We also had Stefan Morrell on the podcast last year, and I put it to him that if procurement functions are moving to get more digital, how can we ensure that we don't lose that magic fairy dust
magic
that leads
fairy
to
dust.
Breakthrough category strategies?
Is that a technical term?
It is
there?
A technical procurement
fairy
term
dust,
for
it.
A really good category strategy. Mm-hmm. Let's hear what he said.
I'm quite clear on the 50% human, 50% machine. There's no competition here. It's not about polarization. And I think right now we see that too often. We need the human first, supported by the technology. And the technology, by the way, will be deployed and used thanks to human. All the procurement teams right now are going through this journey somehow, no? And there is no other alternative. As you say, we have amazing category managers doing a great job today. And others are just, let's say, obsessed by spend transparency, fulfilling the PowerPoint templates. And finally, by the way, they are happy to present a rather pretty poor strategy.
Mm-hmm.
My point is, same with digital. Jonathan, I don't see any risk here. The way you will use the platform is how you want to use it. And great category managers will even better benefit from the tool or just use the tool. And the one who don't want to make any extra effort will use the tool anyway. So I don't see difference.
And another topic that has come up several times is the RFP.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Really fine prawns. And in particular, every one
how
of our...
How long did it take you to think of that?
All but 10
way.
Seconds, yes. And in particular, how every one of our guests seemed to support the idea that we've lost the plot with regards to how we work around RFPs.
I think that's a very polite way of putting it. I think you're right. Procurement as a function has lost the plot with RFPs and the value that they're not bringing by doing them. You know, I see very few that are any use at all, really. Let's hear what Philip Idson said when you asked him if he thought the RFP was dead.
And I don't think the outcome that you drive from an RFP process is necessary. Can that be much more tech-enabled? Yes, it can. Should it be more strategic? Yes, it should be used more strategically. But I don't think the notion of going out to the marketplace to get multiple proposals to figure out where you want to source something is going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, sadly.
We've all been at the receiving end of them.
On that point, I think we would do well to look at how supplier friendly we make RFPs, and that we don't use them as a crutch for having not done our category strategies.
Yeah,
because I think a lot of time that's what they're used for, is we don't understand the category, so we're going to go and ask for everything, and then we're going to use all that information to then build a strategy because it was easier to ask the suppliers than find it out ourselves.
Philip Ideson there, our good colleague in podcasting land from episode 13.
Now it's time for this week's fun fact.
And for this week's 50th edition fun fact special, I thought we'd get all of the team to do a fun fact. And we're going to start with Sydney. What's your fun fact, Sydney?
Giraffes are 30 times more likely to get hit by lightning than people.
Melanie, what's your fun fact?
Now, we all love Google, but did you know what Google was first called?
I've had this in a quiz somewhere, but I can't remember what it is.
No.
Go on.
Back rub.
No.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
It was referring to how the search engine originally used backlinks to rank web pages.
Producer Martin's going to come into the studio to give us his fun fact.
This is a rarity. Yeah. This is a rarity, dear listener.
Did you know Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen doesn't mention its title in its lyrics? However, it does mention the title of the song that knocked it off number one. Do you know what that song is?
No.
Mamma Mia by ABBA.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. What's your fun fact, Paul?
My fun fact is a cloud weighs around 1 million tons.
I'll cross that off because I think we've used the same list.
Really?
A cloud weighs 1 million tons. It was the first thing
that... have to leave that in.
It was the first thing that came up on back rub when I did it.
Equivalent to? How many giraffes?
1 million that weigh a ton.
Can I do my fun fact?
Yes.
Okay. Wind turbines kill more than 100,000 birds each year in the UK. But apparently, if the blades were painted black, you can reduce the deaths by 70%. It's a fun fact.
Oh.
Okay, the Procurement Show posse, everybody. Thank you.
Yes,
very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the home of category management that delivers breakthrough results.
So here we are nearing the end of our 50th show.
50 shows.
And in good broadcasting style, we've done a wrap-up of the highlights from the last 50 episodes. Everything we've talked about, all the guests we've had on, topics we've covered about tech or procurement processes or AI, RFPs, all the acronyms, sustainability, of course, all the things we should be doing or using. But we haven't talked about people.
Mm-hmm.
That would seem pretty important in the world of procurement. People.
It's a really good observation and something that I think reflects, sadly, what I think seems to be happening right now, something that I've noticed, because I've had a lot of conversations with CPOs in recent times who've said things like, we've just been so busy chasing tech to remember that we actually need to invest in our people or train our people. And right now, I would say the worrying trend is organizations are deprioritizing developing their procurement talent. This is really concerning because at the same time, we're expecting our teams to cope with unprecedented change and also have a whole bunch of new skills to do that. Add to that, one of the things I see, it feels like procurement's become a much more stressful place to be in recent times.
In fact, you only need to scroll back one episode to pick up on that topic. When we had Tom Mills on episode 49, for those of you who can't do your maths, 50 minus 1, I mean, obviously episode 49, who explained the need for CPOs to think about something called emotional intelligence. Yeah. I didn't quite get it at first. It needed some explanation to me. And the importance of soft skills in their team.
That's right. And he also talked about how stressful being in procurement can be and why we need to think about resilience as well. Let's listen.
Procurement, perhaps more than many other jobs, is quite a stressful job because you're constantly dealing with potential conflict, non-compliance issues. You're having to persuade the organization there's lots of difficult conversations. And what I noticed was over a period of time, those have an emotional impact which can dent your confidence or can actually spill over into your personal life. So my view is it's absolutely key to being able to develop that resilience and to be able to develop those coping mechanisms, to be able to develop your self-awareness and emotional intelligence. Hopefully that explains it a little bit.
Yeah, that's really useful. And we've talked quite a bit already about emotional competence, emotional intelligence. What about other soft skills? What are the other soft skills that are particularly important for us in procurement?
There's seven things that I think are really important, and they're all underneath this. So I'm going to try to get this right now. Testing my memory. It's been a long day. Teamwork. I know that's quite typical of many roles. Adaptability. That's absolutely key. And I think that's something that's quite missing sometimes from procurement people who are so used to a rigid framework, but you need to be adaptable. Problem solving. So actually a big part of a procurement role is problem solving. You're constantly dealing with a different problem every day. And actually that's a key part of it. And sometimes it can be micro problems. Sometimes it can be really complex things like negotiating a contract. Critical thinking, and I'm going to major on critical thinking because I think that that's something that we are losing, not just within procurement, but as a population, is that ability to be able to step back and say, actually, what am I being told here? What's going on? Is it true? Do I need to assess this? And I think that that's a core to a procurement role. So there's three more, so bear with me. Communication is absolutely key, and I think it's something that's underrated within procurement. We have a job to make sure that we communicate the policy, the processes, but also that we add PR around what we do and the value we can bring. Interpersonal skills. So how do you relate with people within your business? And how do you make sure that you've got really strong interpersonal skills that lead to really good relationships? And the final one I would say is time management. The ability to be able to prioritize all of the things that are really key to being effective in your procurement job. Because I bet you anyone who's listening to this will be thinking, I've got so much to do. And that is a really key part of being effective in procurement.
Tom Mills there from our episode that brought to us the term emotional intelligence.
There you go.
I also remember Kathleen Harmston, who's great. If you don't follow her on LinkedIn, please do. Talking about this along with whether hybrid working was in our best interest. Mm-hmm. Remember after COVID, we kind of looked at hybrid working very much. How it also impacts on us as humans with regards to the amount of screen time we have in our lives.
Yeah, let's hear from Kathleen. And in particular, the thing that was really powerful in her podcast was her three takeaways that she gave us at the end of episode 39. They sum it up nicely. Let's listen.
Before I give you the three takeaways, just a point to make about there's so much change. I would encourage people to think about the fact that they're not a machine, but a highly effective decision maker with a machine. That's going to be helpful along the way. But my three takeaways are rate, response, and regime. So the rate change is going to be unprecedented growth and uptake of AI over the next 3 to 5 years. And grow with the machine. But you are not the machine. So that's the first one. Response, your body will automatically respond to the screen time and changes. So be aware that there are some aspects going on within your biology that you're not able to control real time. So you're going to get responses, fight flight responses, dopamine responses, and so on. And just to be aware of setting boundaries for yourself and taking care of your health and managing electronic stress. And to ask for support and help and training. Be vulnerable and be brave with your boundaries. And then the final one is regime. There's a smorgasbord of systems out there, and we have to have clear boundaries and regimen set by leadership to say what is expected of our working philosophy in the workplace. How will hybrid working pan out in the workplace? And it's about trusting the team, allowing decentralized decision making to take place and getting the right governance around your people so that they'll feel like coming into work and wanting to reconnect with their peers and their colleagues.
Kathleen Harmston there in episode 39.
So does that bring us to the end of our...
I think we're there. Done and dusted. We're over with. We're out of here.
I don't think it does. Okay. It does not, because as you know, I like to finish, and it started off something quite serious, but every time we wrap up the episode, I try and come up with some witty way of introducing our top three takeaways. Yeah. It's come to my attention, really, that the one person who never actually gets a takeaway is you, despite what it looks like. So I guess we've we've covered five overarching topics. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to share with us not your top three,
yeah,
but your top five takeaways. And I hope you've managed to do a little bit of thought to give you the heads up. So please, Jonathan, your top five takeaways.
And I'm glad I can have five, because if I had to squeeze it into three, I would be really struggling. I think what I've learned from doing 50 episodes of The Procurement Show, it kind of encapsulates everything that we need to know about procurement. And again, thank you to the guests, because it's come from the guests. So let's work through the five. So The first is tech. We are in a period of unprecedented rate of change of technology. It's so easy to be overwhelmed and swept along by shiny things, and also lots of promises that, you know, you buy this thing and you know, you don't need to do all the old stuff we did in procurement. Be really careful about that, because that isn't really the case. You know, there are lots of new things out there. We've got to understand the landscape. We've got to be able to engage and take control. So to do that, you need to start with, what do we need from tech? What are our requirements? What do we need to fulfill? So we need a strategy for digital investment and for data, not to just rush out and buy the shiny things. So that's the first bit with tech. The second thing, we talked a lot about data. Many guests talked about data. What's come across all the episodes is that data is an asset. We need to think about data as an asset that belongs to our company and lives in our company that we own, not something that a third-party supplier is providing to us. Yes, we're going to source it, but we need to think about data as an asset. We also need to remember that 70% of tech implementations fail, so it's worthless if it doesn't get adopted. So buying tech is not enough. You've got to think about how you implement it as well. And probably the most important thing that's come out, people. You've got to focus on tech alongside with how you enable your talent. You know, the plane might soon fly itself, but we still need the skilled pilots to make sure it's doing all the right things.
I'm sure you did the typical procurement thing then in Hyde 3 under one particular banner. You're doing it in themes. Okay, tell us your number two.
Yeah, so that was number one. Number two is AI.
Oh, right, okay.
So everything we do in procurement will change. Mm-hmm. We know that. And I think right now everyone's rushing out because AI is a bit of a sort of gimmick, but we ain't seen nothing yet. What is a gimmick today actually is going to be embedded in all the systems we use. So we don't need to worry too much about rushing out there and trying to embrace AI, because it's going to be there. It's going to be part of what we do. But beware of the risks, especially if we're using OpenAI. Remember, everything we feed to an OpenAI is out there. Those LLMs are sucking all the data and learning from that. And it's easy to assume that we put something into AI and it's right. We've learned across all the episodes we've done, it's not. There are hallucinations that we need to be aware of. You don't ask the right prompts in the first place, you don't get the right returns. And of course, you're giving away competitive advantage by giving away your data. So beware of the risks, which means you need to train your teams in using AI. The key thing that came out from the podcast with Kath Harmiston was AI is not here to replace the team, but to be part of the team.
Okay. Your theme number three,
sustainability.
Yes.
Globally, we're not doing great. Equality, human rights, environmental impacts, we're going backwards. That's really clear. The second thing is, it's not optional. The only question is, how far might we choose to go with sustainability? We also learned that it doesn't necessarily need to cost more, but it might at first. But one of the big themes from all the people that talked about sustainability is, to really do it and drive change, there are no shortcuts. You've got to put a lot of effort in. You've got to really understand the supply chain. You've got to understand every corner of a supply chain to start driving change. And procurement has to lead on this. The wider organization isn't equipped to do it.
And I did say you can go to five. So number four, please. Your fourth theme.
So the fourth theme is about procurement excellence and category management, because as you know, I'm passionate about category management. It is a critical enabler for the future. The context and the application is changing rapidly, but category management's not going anywhere, which means it's crucial that we have exceptional category managers, but ones that have the feet firmly in the digital world, which means that the need for exceptional application is even more critical now than it's ever been. And the other thing, we talked about RFPs earlier in this episode. If we keep doing the same things the same ways, we'll get the same less than great results. Time to abandon some of those traditional approaches, like the way we do RFPs.
And remember, there are those that Catman don't and those that
Kathmandu.
Yes, indeed. Number
we didn't rehearse that, did we?
And number five, please.
A five, the biggest one, the most important one is people. Procurement's got a more stressful place to be in recent years. So resilience in our teams is absolutely top priority. The trend that we're seeing of forgetting to invest in our people because we're too busy driving technology, that's got to change if we want a high-performing function. But also at the same time, what has also come across from all of our guests is we need new skill sets. We need an advanced strategic capability, category management, especially data and digital skills, soft skills, with that emotional intelligence as well as a key attribute for great procurement people.
That's a great list. In fact, it has highlighted a few topics that we need to revisit because things have moved on.
Like AI.
Also, with regards to category management, I would like to see an episode where you defend the future of category management because it does get a bad running, doesn't it?
It can.
Do you know what? It's such a good list of topics. If only there was some way we could capture it in some bottle of delight.
Well, I think we already have. And it's called The Procurement Show Podcast, except we don't sell it. It's out there for free because we're passionate about wanting to develop the industry and make procurement great. And this insight hasn't come from us. It's the collective summary from all the incredible guests that we've been fortunate enough to have on the show over the last 50 episodes. So thank you so much. We really appreciate that.
So in order to celebrate 50 episodes, I've got a present for you.
Have you?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Have a listen to this.
Okay.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan O'Brien.
So I've got my own sung jingle now.
You have?
A sung jingle?
You have.
You paid a professional team of singers and creators to come in and record a jingle.
I did not.
Okay.
I just need to let you know something. Right. I apologise for this, but you know. We didn't have the budget to do that because he works in procurement, you know, and
true.
It's his money. So what I did is I used a little bit of AI. I apologize for those who perhaps, you know, but we genuinely just wanted to do it as a demonstration of AI and all that kind of stuff.
It's the thought that counts.
I did think about doing lots of things. So we've got some sung jingles. We're going to drop them in from episode 51 moving forward. So there you go. What do you think?
I'm bowled over by that.
I bet you
are.
Literally over bowled, aren't you? So keep an ear out for them, but now there's only one thing left to do.
Yes.
Do you know what?
I do.
Champagne and cake.
Champagne and cake.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening to The Procurement Show and for making this such a global success. Our new season starts next month. We've got some great podcasts coming up, including Making What We Buy Sustainable, Lessons from Tetra Pak. We've got Gen Z, The Future of Procurement, What the Police Can Teach Us About Negotiation, and Spend Matters Tell Us What's Trending in Procurement Tech, all on The Procurement Show podcast.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. And visit us at theprocurementshow.com. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing. All rights reserved.